From downtown Seattle, this is the Como Politicast with Jeff Pogula.
Well, here we are in a special edition of the Como Politicast. Joining us now in the studio is Washington State Governor Jay Inslee. He's also running for president, but we're talking about state business today. First off, thank you so much for your time and for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for your interest in democracy.
Yeah, well, absolutely. That's what we do here on the Politicast. As far as state issues, let's talk about the broad thing first. The legislative session wraps up in a couple of weeks. What do you see as the biggest accomplishment so far?
Well, we just signed a bill that I think is very important. It's a bill to prohibit kids under the age of 21 from getting access to vaping and tobacco products. I've been working on this for 6 years with many people, Bob Ferguson, students, nurses, because this is going to save people's lives. We know that I think it's 1 out of 5 of our young people are becoming addicted in this way, and 1 out of 3 of those people die of a tobacco-related illness. So this is a huge issue to prevent loss of life in our state. And sometimes you do things in public life that are kind of quiet. It may not be a headline, but they save thousands of people's lives over the decades. And this is one of them we did today. It was a bipartisan bill. And I'm glad that we made some real progress to save people from the scourges of emphysema. Senator Cudahy today talked about a relative of hers who had emphysema, and listening to him in the last days of his struggling for breath, we don't want our relatives and our children to have to go through that, and this bill we had today is a significant achievement.
But there's been a lot of criticism, too. I mean, you raise the smoking age, but, you know, people still have to register for the draft at 18. You know, how do you enforce the tobacco rules in that age range of 18 to 21?
Well, what I can tell you is these things work. The public health specialists you talk to will say, yes, it won't be 100%. You know, but it's a significant improvement in reduction of access to these products. And it also gives us as parents and uncles and grandparents kind of moral and legal authority to say, no, you just can't do that. I talked to a parent as we were leaving the meeting today, said, I've been arguing with my son or daughter about this. Now I can say, look, you don't have a choice. We don't have any more argument. It's just illegal. So you can't do this anymore. And if we can get these kids to stop at this early age, we can save so many thousands of lives. So I'm happy about this. Like I said, Trudy and I have been working on this for 6 years, so it's good step forward.
Well, a lot of the negotiations in Olympia right now are centering around the budget, your budget.
Yep.
Proposed significant state spending increases, 21%, you know, and taxes to pay for it, for, you know, saving the orcas and things of that nature. Even with the Democrats in control, they seem to have only given you a bit of a fraction of what you had asked for. How do you respond to that?
Well, look, this is not even halftime yet. Everyone has put an idea into the pool, and
there's two weeks left in the session.
And they're all working on it to resolve the conflict between these budgets. What we've done, and I hope that ultimately we do, which is to fulfill the obligation to our kids' education. This is the biggest driving force of this budget. It's $4 billion that was kind of the second installment of the McCleary decision, which we owe our kids' education, and that's the big driving force. Now, there are others, the need to finance a mental health. We know we have a big challenge to give people adequate mental health. We're in a court order to provide literally billions of dollars of relief to improve culverts so they don't block salmon streams. These are court orders. The emergent concern about the orcas is one that's compelling to, I know, many if not all people in the state of Washington. So reality is driving these budgets, not the governor. And reality means that we have to find a way to pay these bills, and I'm hopeful that we'll find a way to do that. This is what democracy looks like, which is a great struggle and much gnashing of teeth, and then at the end, hopefully a great budget, and I hope that'll happen.
What do you say to the people that say that we already are paying too much in taxes? Property taxes have gone up. You know, we're paying for, you know, education obviously is one thing with the McCleary decision, but people, a lot of the times that I talk to, they feel strained when it comes to their budget.
Well, look, we'd all rather have schools and roads for $0. We really would. That would be wonderful. It would make being governor a real snap. But it doesn't work that way. We decide to invest in ourselves and invest in our future and our children. And those are investments, the same way you fix a roof on your house. And if the roof is leaking, you can't really say, well, I'm sorry, I don't want to pay for a roof. And it's just a fact. So the fact is, the state of Washington is under many court orders to provide better services. They are under a court order to provide for the education of our children. That takes about $4 billion in this budget cycle or upcoming budget cycle. They are under court order to provide investment for our salmon. There are many court orders about our mental health system, where we have people that have been in jail too long waiting to get mental health. These are not options. This is not like deciding whether you put in a stereo in your new Buick or not. These are requirements of the law. And so we have an obligation to find a way to finance those. And what I have suggested in doing that is that instead of working people having the majority of that, we ought to have some folks in the higher end of the income pool. That's why I've proposed a capital gains tax, so that people who are doing very well, we've proposed the folks, I think it's 1.5% of the higher end, ought to be chipping in a little bit more to reduce or at least not increase the burden on working people. I think that's a fair thing to do. So we believe in our kids' education, we believe in following the law, and we believe in, I think, a fairer tax system. That's what we proposed, and I hope we get a good result at the end of the session.
And you mentioned mental health. Obviously, that's a big issue for not only here in Seattle and King County, but across the state. Mm-hmm. We've got a homelessness crisis that we're having to deal with. And one of the big criticisms that we have seen is that particularly these encampments that are along the state highways. Mm-hmm. But your administration has left it up to cities like Seattle to deal with it. Why is that?
Well, actually, the DOT does work with cities to prevent unhygienic conditions and safety issues, and the DOT does work on that on our right-of-way. But we don't control the entire state. That's under the control of private owners, cities, counties, and other entities. So when there's folks in the DOT right-of-ways, there is involvement on DOT. But we have to recognize this is a major challenge that requires everyone to pull together to really address homelessness. And what we're proposing this year is quite a number of measures to be more active in the state. That includes in my budget over $150 million of new capital budget to try to build more housing, make more housing available. Over $90 million in our operating funds to provide low-income housing on a shorter-term basis. It includes some changes in our laws that will end up with more housing, including changes in condo liability laws. Look, the significant problem we have is that our economy is the hottest in the nation. It's the best economy in America, and as a result, it is a magnet for tens of thousands of people to move here, and we're not building housing fast enough to accommodate them. As a result, they squeeze out folks at the lower end of the income scale. So we have to find a way to build more housing. And there's a variety of ideas now in the legislature, including condo liability reform, so we can build more. And when I say condo, that's not necessarily high end. These are working people's units. Efforts to look at some of our zoning laws, efforts to look at small housing creative, efforts to look at low barrier housing for homelessness folks. And really importantly, coming back to one of the things we talked about, we need to have mental health facilities and services for these folks, because a number of folks have mental health, untreated mental health care concerns in this group of people. Not everyone, but a certain number of people. And that comes, frankly, isn't cheap. You can't build a mental health hospital for $0. So if we care about this, and I think we do, largely speaking, we've got to make the investments to solve this problem. I think sometimes it's easy to think, you know, somehow you would just have people disappear. People are not going to disappear. They need some rational, reasonable way to get back into society. That includes job training, mental health supports, training or help with chemical addiction problems. And another thing we're doing is a way to divert them out of the criminal justice system. Right now, unfortunately, our county jails have been sort of de facto mental health hospitals. That's a very expensive and ineffective way to deal with people with mental health. So having a mental health system that really helps them get on their feet, get out, get into housing, get into a job, this is what we need to work on together.
part of your legislative goal for the season, or one of your legislative goals for this session, I should say, had to do a lot with green energy and making the state much more renewable. You and I are both from Eastern Washington. You represented the district I grew up in back in the early 90s in Yakima and the Tri-Cities. There's a lot of people there that are very skeptical about that plan. One, they fear that the Snake River dams are going to be breached, Columbia River dams are going to be breached, and that would drive up costs because they generate a lot of power. There's concern that nuclear power, which is, you know, you have the nuclear plant at Hanford, isn't considered green. How do you respond to those?
Well, several things. Number one, I think we ought to be optimistic in our ability to build a clean energy economy. And the reason we ought to be optimistic is because we're the most innovative, inventive, creative state in the country of the most innovative, creative country in the world. And I think we ought to approach this with optimism, that we can build technologies that are putting people to work. We're doing it, including Eastern Washington. You know, we're the largest manufacturer of carbon fiber that goes into electric cars in the Western Hemisphere. It's in Moses Lake, Washington. The largest solar farm in our state is in Lind, Washington, in Southeast Washington, town of about 350. The largest manufacturer of polysilicates that goes into solar cells is in Moses Lake, Washington. One of the larger manufacturer of biofuels is in Grays Harbor, Washington. So what we have found is we're growing technologies in many, many areas that are putting people to work to really build a clean energy economy. And that's, importantly, I mentioned this because it's not just Seattle, it's in smaller communities around the state of Washington. So actually there is a bill this year that I support that's moving forward to include hydroelectric in our 100% requirement that we have 100% clean energy. We know how valuable it is. We're doing the right thing, which is to follow the federal court and have a vigorous examination of all the issues around the Snake River dams. We haven't made any decisions about that. So I think if we approach this with optimism that is inherent in Washingtonians' history and future, we're going to do really well. We're going to lead the country and grow a ton of jobs in the clean energy sector. I believe that.
Is nuclear power green?
I think that nuclear power, we should not eliminate it from consideration for all time, but it means that we're going to have to find if it is going to grow, there will have to be a new way to make it cost effective. There will have to be a way to make it safer with passive safety. There will have to be a way to win public acceptance. And there have to be a way to resolve some waste disposal issues. So all of those would have to be done. I think it makes sense to do research about those things to find out whether those questions can be answered. But we don't have the answers to those right now.
You know, your time is limited. One last question. The state having to spend money for your campaign.
Excuse me, I can't talk about the campaign. I'd really love to.
No,
I need to get off, so I can only talk about official matters. Thanks a million. Appreciate it, and I will return someday.
All right.
Thank you very much.
As you can tell, the governor wasn't too pleased with that question. But in Inslee's defense, state and federal law prevent any candidate from campaigning on the taxpayer's dime, and he was here on official business. But we wanted to know about the additional money the State Patrol is spending on his security while he campaigns for president, and that is a legitimate question about state issues. Earlier in the day, he spoke live on Como Radio with Elisa Jaffe and was a bit more forthcoming.
And Governor, one of the things is the budget to protect you. It's a State Patrol mandate by the legislature to do so. It's expected this year to go $756,000 over the budget of $715,000. In 2020, the budget is projected to spend another $2,020,000 over budget. So what do you say to the people of this state when the legislature is also trying to get $18 million back from the WSP?
Well, we're doing what we should do, which is to follow the law. And so we're continuing to follow the law, and we're doing that. And I'm working closely with legislators on a host of issues that they are making progress on. I'm very hopeful that we're going to make good housing progress. I've proposed over $150 million in our capital budget and about $90 million in our operating budget to deal with our housing crisis. They're making good progress on the mental health issue. We have a behavioral health issue. We know Washingtonians really need better mental health. I've talked to so many parents who've been concerned that their kids cannot get mental health. They're moving forward on our ORCA recovery program to hopefully we're going to make good progress to help
our orcas' survival. And they've passed one bill that's very exciting, which is a long-term care bill, which will help Washingtonians with long-term care. And, of course, we just signed this tobacco bill and the energy bills I talked about earlier. So we are making good progress working with legislators, and I'm glad they're really focused on things that's going to make a difference in people's lives. And I'm excited about this session. I think it's going to be a good one.
But I was talking about, I guess, the $2 million that could be over for your protection. Are you worried about your protection?
Well, the law basically requires the Washington State Patrol to provide security for
Yeah, since 1965,
the
they've
governor.
Had to.
It's been the law for a long time, and it's provided for the security of Republicans and Democrats and like. And these folks are tremendously proficient and efficient. We love them. They've done great work, and I think about them a lot. And you get a new window when you work with state troopers to understand the risk that these law enforcement officers take. I've always been a great admirer of people in law enforcement, but doubly so when I see how proficient these folks are.
So far, the Inslee campaign has declined to reimburse the state for any security costs, saying that by law, governors are to be protected no matter what they are doing. And this isn't a new debate. Governors of both parties have received criticism for security costs when they run for president. Both Bobby Jindal of Louisiana and Scott Walker of Wisconsin faced similar issues in 2016 during their campaigns. And that will do it for this special episode of the Como Politicast. My thanks to this week's guest, Governor Jay Inslee, as well as Tara Lee, Madeline Hastings, Doug Pigsley, Elisa Jaffe, Marilyn Napier, and Haley Helber. If you like the show, please leave a rating and a review. It helps with our rankings and helps other people discover the program. And be sure to check out some of the other podcasts from Como News, including the Thursday Night Doghouse with Bill Swartz and Life Beat with Marina Rockinger. Available from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Jeff Pogula. Thank you for listening, and have a good week.